Hello, this is Robert Rickover at Body Earning, and today my guest is Anne Shoebridge, who is an Alexander Technique teacher and a physiotherapist in Melbourne, Australia. Anne has done a lot of work with musicians, and she has found that, well, the number of playing-related injuries and poor body use has really encouraged her to follow up on that aspect of Alexander teaching, and just her interest in general. It's led her to, I believe, almost finishing a doctorate relating to playing-related injuries. She's presented her work at performing arts and medicine and music education conferences around the world. And now we get to the topic of our conversation today. She's done a study on musicians' posture titled Minding the Body, an Interdisciplinary Theory of Optimal Posture for Musicians. It was published in the Psychology of Music Journal in January 2017, and we're going to talk about that study. Anne, welcome to the show.
Thanks very much for having me here, Robert.
Well, it's a pleasure, and perhaps you could begin by giving our listeners a short description or definition of the Alexander Technique.
Well, the Alexander Technique enables you to coordinate yourself optimally for whatever it is you want to do. I also like John Nichols' definition. He says that the Alexander Technique provides a way of integrating postural support, movement, and breathing for any activity.
Right. So it's a very general technique. It isn't really specifically for musicians, although it is used quite a bit by musicians. So I would like to begin our conversation by just reading a few lines of which you wrote me, which are kind of the reason why you wrote this paper. And you write, posture influences music technique, and poor posture is associated with performance-related problems in musicians. Student musicians rely on music teachers, physiotherapists, and Alexander Technique teachers for advice about posture and performance-related problems. And then here's kind of a key sentence. However, it is unknown whether these professional groups share a common understanding of optimal posture, or if posture management strategies align with performance goals. So that's kind of the takeoff point for your study, is that right?
It really is, yeah. Yes. And you're right, I had found that through my work giving musicians workshops or working with them with Alexander Technique and performance. And although they knew the qualities they wanted for the best possible posture for playing, which was all around balance and fluidity, when it came to exercising or finding strategies for optimal posture, they tended to be quite rigid and straighten up and hold themselves and didn't necessarily have a mechanism to achieve what they wanted. Yeah.
Right. And so there are these three groups, of which you are a member of two, as a physiotherapist and an Alexander Technique teacher. And I'm only a member of one, but I have certainly observed what you've observed. And what I think is very interesting about this study and what you're going to be talking about is this whole, in a way, it's kind of looking at the situation from the perspective of an actual musician who's in pain or has performance-related issues, and they are confronted with this choice and perhaps some other choices about who to go to and who to believe. And that's what I think you're going to talk about. What are the similarities? What are the differences?
Okay. So also, I do have that third hat as well to some extent, because I've been involved in music all my life, and in fact came across the Alexander Technique through the study of music.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, so I'm very lucky to have a foot in all three camps, which
makes
three feet, really.
Yeah, right.
Yes. So, yes, we've known now through research that what musicians do first when they encounter problems is that they generally refer to their teachers first and their peers. So that's one group, music teachers, that's really central to a young musician's life. And that group is really expert at knowing the instrument inside out, how the instrument works, and also the musical outcomes they want. They're very clear about that and very creative in pursuing strategies to achieve what they want. So then when musicians encountering problems look outside their own profession, they generally go to physiotherapists and Alexander teachers, and after those two, their GP. So with physiotherapists, we have a very high level of skill in being able to pinpoint mechanical problems in the body, if you like, so structural problems and difficulties that are interfering with smooth, coordinated movement, and very good at diagnosing and then treating those particular things. So if there's a focal problem that needs to be dealt with, then a physiotherapist is a very, very good person to have. There are also some physios who are really expert at movement and particularly in the areas of sports physio and also neurophysio, which is a different sort of way in to movement. But the real sort of across the board strength is in that specific diagnosis and treatment.
Right, right.
Then Alexander teachers approach it from an understanding and a knowledge of principles of psychophysical coordination. So the mind and the body working together to achieve the outcome you want with the least possible strain. But it's not just about effortlessness, it's actually about appropriate distribution of muscle effort, because sometimes if some muscles have been underworking, they need to work a bit more, and other ones,
yes,
other muscles
absolutely
have to work less.
Yeah,
so it's really a redistribution of effort. So those three professions working in their strengths are actually completely complementary. But the problem is that people tend to silo, what's called siloing, so staying within their own area of expertise instead of putting their strengths together. So the purpose of this paper was to draw on all of those areas of expertise and to see what they came up with.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
It might be worth just saying a sentence or two about the fourth option that you mentioned, which is going to a doctor. I know that's not part of your study, but that is something that often happens as well, or sometimes happens.
It does. It's really important that musicians are able to consult practitioners who understand the music culture and the mechanisms of playing music.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also well reported in the literature that It's a common frustration for musicians to consult medical practitioners who have no idea about what they do and how central it is to their lives.
Mm-hmm.
So it's GPs really need to be able to either refer to someone who does know that. In Australia, there's an association called the Australian Society for Performing Arts Healthcare. In America, it's a Performing Arts Medicine Association. In Britain, it's British Association of Performing Arts Medicine. So there are performing arts medicine associations that have that expertise in their ranks.
Mm-hmm.
And so there are resources for musicians to be able to go to. There's also some very good online forums. Mind Music and Movement is one, Musicians Health Collective is another. So it's very important that if a musician goes to a medical practitioner who doesn't have an understanding of what they're trying to achieve, or says, "What are you talking about? How can you possibly be injured from playing an instrument?" Or thinks, or even someone, sometimes it happens that they go to a physio and their function is restored to a level for normal activity, but not to a level that meets the demands of playing.
That's a
So,
very good point. Yeah.
So they need to find someone who can work with them with the instrument and with those specific demands. It's actually what you've done is gone with that question, gone straight to one of the aspects of the study, which was barriers to change. And the people in the study identified that one of the barriers to change, a big one, was that medical practitioners didn't know enough about music and the demands of playing music, and musicians and music teachers didn't know enough about the body and the mind-body connection. And yes, and if there was more knowledge across the board between those groups, then that would serve musicians very well in performance and health.
So, do you want to talk a little bit about the study itself and what you found?
Yes, well, it was actually really exciting. One of the things that I didn't expect about doing research is these unexpected discoveries. And because whether you like it or not, you do go in with certain ideas about how you think it's going to turn out. And when it turns out differently, it's incredibly exciting. And the very first thing that happened when I interviewed these people, and then drew all the information out of the interviews, was that I realized that they had come up almost word for word with exactly the same definition of optimal posture. So that means that we are all after exactly the same thing, and that's such a good start. So
Yeah,
what I
and the,
feel,
you, we say a little bit about who you interviewed and the methodology of that aspect of it.
sure. So I chose those three professional groups that musicians consult most often. So people who train music teachers, so heads of university music departments, instrumental departments, people who train physiotherapists, so that's physiotherapy lecturers at university, and
Right.
people who train Alexander Technique teachers.
Yeah.
I
Perfect.
yeah. So I interviewed them, and each interview was around about an hour. The interviews were transcribed, then I coded and analyzed all of those transcriptions and came up with a theory that embraced all of the concepts, the main concepts that came through. So it's a real fusion.
Right. And you said that their description or definition of good posture across those three groups was remarkably similar, pretty much the same. Could you put that in, actually say what that was?
Sure. So every single participant defined optimal posture as efficient coordination that enables the best performance with the least strain. And that applied not only to music, but to any activity.
Right.
Another
So we should
interesting.
put a little pause here and just point out
Sure.
that when you say any other activity, it really means any other activity. So everything we're going to be talking about could apply to other issues like back pain or stiff necks, whatever, right? In the general
Yeah.
public. It's not just about musicians, although that was the focus of your study.
Sure. Or just not even sort of dealing with pain or disability or injury, but just doing what you do better.
Yes, that's perfect, yeah.
So the terms that they all came up with to describe optimal posture were all about movement rather than position, which is also not what I expected from my experience of hearing what or watching what people did when they were trying to achieve decent posture. because that tended to be static. But all of these people used words to describe optimal posture, like dynamic, balanced, fluid, open, effortless, comfortable, grounded, and allowing an uninterrupted, even flow of breath. So they were all conditions that people used to or associated with good posture.
Yeah, and it is sort of ironic because often when you ask people, you just mention the word posture, they'll sort of stiffen themselves up in some fixed position, which they believe is the good posture, and they do the thing they think they should be doing all the time, but now that you've mentioned it, they now remember, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's right. Although when I talk to them, they all knew, or they know, musicians at that high level, they all know what they want in terms of quality, but there's a mismatch between the quality they're after mm-hmm. and the strategies they have to achieve it.
Exactly, yeah. And it's a dramatic discrepancy, really.
It really is.
I mean, it's about as discrepant as you can get.
Yeah,
if that's a word. Yeah.
Yeah. There is the sort of, I guess the traditional view of posture is that it is a position, you know, sit up straight, shoulders back, head up, chest out, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
But of course, for one thing, if you try that, you can't breathe properly.
Right.
But also, another, in the next second, I'm going to, you know, put my hand out and pick up my glass of water. Well, that's wrecked that posture, hasn't it? So we need to change the idea of posture as position to posture as coordination. So even if we're still, even if we're just sitting absolutely still, movement never stops. It's always going on internally. So position itself is an outcome of good coordination. It's not the process. And that's people confuse the outcome, an outcome they're after or they think they're after in the moment with the process.
Exactly, yeah. Or, you know, the word posture itself is generally thought of as a noun these days, but back in the day, it was used quite often as a verb. But now, when it's used as a verb, it's sort of a negative thing, like he's posturing. But the original meaning of the word included its verb function.
Indeed. Yeah. And yes, and another aspect that participants brought forward related to what you've just said is that they acknowledged and discussed the fact that posture was actually a much more global thing than just a physical thing. So it reflected the situation at hand, so whatever you're dealing with, reflects your attitude to the situation. It reflects your history, your physical makeup. It's influenced by what's happened to you in the past, and it's completely idiosyncratic. So it's a mind body attitude or condition that changes in the moment depending on the demands of the situation.
Exactly. Yeah. So they all agree in principle, but what I assume there's the next step in your study is what the how can well, the, yeah go ahead
okay so the next step was to bring together all of the information in the that they gave me, and the information was centered around the questions I asked, obviously, which is what is optimal posture for musicians? How do you teach and manage posture? So how do you address postural problems? And if seeing as everyone knows that posture is a problem, why is it still a problem? What are the barriers to change? Mm-hmm. So they were the areas I was looking at. What is posture? How do you deal with it, and what's stopping us from changing? When I pulled all the information out of the interviews, I came up with a central idea, like a central descriptor, which brings together posture as a mind-body phenomenon, but also pays attention to the fact that we need to look after our bodies, which is something that historically has been neglected in music. People used to think of music as a highfalutin art, and the body really didn't have a lot to do with it. That's changed a lot, but it's still sort of, I don't really need to look after my body unless I've got a problem. There's a bit of that attitude around.
Well, and there, I think there's also, a bit, at least in the States, a bit of an attitude that, hey, if you're in pain when you're playing, just deal with it, keep playing,
Absolutely.
which is not a good piece of advice. But I think that is a kind of out there among some professional musicians. You just put up with it.
Well, it
Stop
was really.
complaining already.
That's right. And there was a culture of silence, I think, for several reasons. But one is that music is incredibly competitive. It's difficult to get a professional job. And musicians have, in the past, been very afraid that if they acknowledge injury, even to themselves, a frailty or an imperfection, that they won't be able to compete in a very competitive world. So these days, a tremendous amount of work has been done since the mid-80s on performing arts health, and we now know that injuries in music are as prevalent as injuries in sport. So really, athletes and musicians are athletes of the small muscles. So we need to treat the body with the same respect and care as we would playing elite sport. And that central theme that I brought everything together under is minding the body. So mind and body and looking after the body.
And then is there then a question, as you said, they all agree on what good posture is, but they do have different ways of getting people bringing that about or trying to bring that about in the in their students or clients.
Yeah, there are people work obviously to their strengths. So, with the strategies for bringing about the qualities that we're after, that we spoke briefly about before, you can expect that, well, this is what the study suggests, that music teachers are going to have all sorts of creative ways of bringing about the quality of music they want and the quality of movement, because they associated free, balanced movement with a nice sound, a good tone. So they tended to be, they would engage awareness right from the beginning, not everyone, but a lot of people, using things like peer feedback in group classes, videos, verbal feedback. One person interestingly said that even when students are given feedback, they're not always able to respond to it. But if they see it on video, visually, it's much easier for them. They use imagery, focused listening, that sort of thing. Physiotherapists would tend to look at what's hurting and what movement might be causing that, and then suggest changes to the movement, and also suggest strategies to reduce the inflammation and the pain. And Alexander teachers are going to look at how the whole body supports and moves against gravity, how it supports and moves the instrument, and whether the whole thing is being supported from an expanding central framework that enables the person to be dynamically strong as well as movable and responsive. One of the, well, I guess when I talk about minding the body as the central idea of optimal posture, there were five subcategories. Two of them were about what optimal posture means. Two were about strategies, and one was about barriers to change. So the two that were describing optimum posture were maintaining ease and finding balance. So those two were really associated with mitigating against risk factors for playing-related injuries, the top risk factor being excessive playing-related tension,
mm-hmm.
and stress being another one.
Mm-hmm.
So it's that's where the sort of the health aspect comes in. And also, so less strain on the body and also being able to just play better and perform better and communicate a musical idea much more clearly in a less cluttered manner. So that's what maintaining ease and finding balance really helped with.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and it's finding balance really is about not just the body and the instrument, but also finding balance with the music and the external environment, the audience, the space, everything that's required in that moment. So it's a much bigger picture than just a physical picture.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Mm. The two categories that were about strategies I called challenging habits and expanding the framework. Challenging habits was something that everyone pretty much picked out. And there is a danger that across the professional spectrum, actually, that if someone isn't doing what you ask them to do, it's because they're lazy or they don't have the wherewithal or they don't try hard enough, that sort of stuff.
Right.
It's very easy to, in medicine, for years, I've had a lot of people who've been to medical practitioners who everything's tried, nothing works, and the person is then told that they're malingering.
Yeah, that's nice.
And something similar came through with music students, or the frustration of teachers saying the students just don't change. But one of the music teacher participants said the trouble is they just don't have a mechanism. You tell them what's wrong, but they can't observe it in themselves and they can't change it. So when it came to the strategies for challenging habits, there were two main things that needed to happen. One was to engage the person's awareness from the first lesson about themselves, their instrument, and the music. And the other one was to retrain movement.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So for challenging habits, I already spoke about music teachers using really creative means to do that. Of course, Alexander teachers are going to use guided movement to assist the person to repattern, right. and to bring awareness to whatever it is they might want to change to make things more fluid.
Right.
And,
right.
Yep. And they will help the person to recognize the things that are interfering with the job at hand.
Mm-hmm.
The physiotherapists talked about the importance of collaboration. So physiotherapy was acknowledged as being in transition from a sort of a primarily biomechanical model to a much more mind-body coalition. A lot of that's as a result of recent pain research, but also physios who are working in an occupational health environment recognize how important the task at hand and the prevailing culture is to people's posture or attitude. So you have to work within that framework. So the musician at the instrument, for example, as well as away from the instrument, to understand what's going on and to be able to apply these principles that you're wanting to bring about in practice, not just in theory.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, and did you want to talk at all about specific obstacles to coordinating these three groups, or do you think we've covered that?
Just one. One other thing was that a significant obstacle was people sort of sticking within their own framework and not reaching beyond it.
Yeah.
So that included for music teachers an adherence to music traditions. There are definite traditional streams in music, without
Mm-hmm.
really questioning whether or not that's even healthy for the musician. So really needing to look at what's happening and look beyond one's own expertise to expand one's view and bring in other ideas or other ways of doing it to see what works best. So that was in expanding the framework. That was another really important thing, not only mentally but also physically. You actually want to have a physically expanded framework to work with.
Right. So, given that this is an Alexander Technique podcast, what would you say were some bits that, well, drawing from your study, what are some bits of advice you would give to Alexander Technique teachers who do deal with students who have taken advice from their music teachers or from PTs? How should they approach those different modalities? Or how should we
Well, the
approach
first,
them, since that's the one thing we both are here as Alexander teachers.
we are. The first thing to do is to recognize that generally the student or the musician is going to be much more expert at their instrument than you are. So
I
you don't have
certainly
to be,
hope so.
yeah.
Yeah.
You don't have to be expert at what they do as well as expert at what you do.
Right.
But what you do have to do is listen to them and find the meeting points of your expertise. So it's more, you not you should do this, but what happens if we do this? Does that improve things from my point of view and from your point of view? Let's try this.
So
So,
an attitude of experimentation, a
and
willingness
an
to
open,
experiment, yeah.
that's right. And an open mind is to an open mind to absorb and learn about what they're doing and then
Right.
bring your expertise to that. So
Right.
that's the first thing. The second thing is, wherever possible, contact their teacher and say, you're working with this person, and tell them that you're interested in supporting what they're trying to achieve and ask if there's anything that they in particular that they would want you to address. And ask them also to contact you if there's anything that is apparently conflicting with what they're trying to do. So opening up that dialogue between you.
Yes, I think that's probably something that many Alexander Technique teachers, especially if they're not musicians themselves, would not think to do.
Yes, it's tricky.
It is
I would
it's very tricky, but yeah.
I think it's a good thing to do because often I think Alexander teachers, because we came through the performing arts rather than through a sort of a higher status, if you like, profession like the medical profession, I think we often feel like we're not taken as seriously as we'd like to be, or as you commented to me earlier the other day, even known about, really.
Exactly.
You can
Yeah. Yeah.
pretty much expect that people won't know what you do. But music teachers also feel like they don't enjoy much respect. And I think very often, and I think that it's once you realize that what you're both trying to do is the best possible job against fairly high odds, then it's much easier to join forces.
Yeah. Yeah.
And medical practitioners, when you approach them with the look, this is what I'm trying to do, and be open to whatever they're trying to do as well. I think that openness is really the key to good communication. It's when people get defensive and I don't know, territorial, that things get tricky. And then
Yeah.
that what tends to happen in that scenario is that the site of conflict is the musician, and they're having to deal with conflict between professions as well as whatever's going on for them, and that's just awful.
I think it's easy for us and the other professions too, maybe, to forget what the musician, him or herself, is actually facing, which is often a serious issue, and these at odds suggestions from different groups. You
Yeah.
know, it's a pretty unpleasant place to be if they're not
Yes.
cooperating.
Yeah, one bloke actually wrote a paper about his experience of it, which is fairly hair-raising. But the tack I take if I do have someone who has been told something that, the sit up straight kind of a thing, that doesn't work if you per se, or a classic one is for upper string players is when they're told to roll the shoulder back, left shoulder back, and pin it down to the torso because there's a strong tendency just to lift it up and squeeze it into the neck to support the instrument. But the trouble is that if it's fixed, it can't move. And as we know, good arm movement and good transmission of support from an expanded torso for the arm and the instrument requires sort of a dynamic stability as opposed to an adynamic stability or a fixing in the shoulder blade. So if someone's told something like that, I say to them, look, that is one way of doing it. This is another way. Why don't you just try both and see what works best for you?
And that's putting the student in the driver's seat, really.
Yes.
They
Yes.
where they really should be, since it's their problem, it's their body, that's, it's their life.
Exactly. Yeah, and music students at the level that I'm working with as a rule, so university level and above, very, very highly motivated, very high degree of self-efficacy. So it's very important that they have strategies that they can go and go away and work with themselves that makes sense to them and bring about the changes that they're after in a performance sense. It's very the thing that they will be concentrating on rather than pain will be their sound and their performance quality.
Yeah,
Yeah.
that's a very good point. I wonder if this would be a good place to bring our conversation to a close. What do you think?
Sure. I think so.
All
Yeah.
right, I think we've covered a lot of ground here and a lot of food for thought for Alexander teachers who are listening to this, as well as PTs and music teachers and music students. So my guest today has been Anne Shoebridge, who is an Alexander Technique teacher in Melbourne, Australia. And I will put, I guess, a link to your Austat page, maybe, by the
Yes.
interview. So if you're in that part of the world and you're interested in Alexander lessons, give her a call. I'll also put a link to a site that will tell you more about the Alexander technique in general, and there is a page on that site that's devoted to musicians. And and so Anne, thank you so much for being on the show today.
That's a pleasure, Robert. Thanks for inviting me.